We're going to get going here. We don't have a quorum yet, but we are going to start. We've got a real full agenda today. We're going to hear Representative Pepin's bill. We've laid out just for the audience, I'll kind of lay out our time frame. We're going to hear first from the pro House file 9. Is it House file 9, Representative Pepin's bill? And then we're going to hear from the con people and then from the citizens, the idea being that we should be able to wrap up a little before 10 and then hear the bill today or vote on the bill before 10 o'clock. If we don't make that time frame, we've allowed to come back tonight, I believe at 4:30, back in the same room, and we'll continue on. And if anybody's wondering, the room is reserved till midnight. And then we'll go forward. Are we good yet? You got Representative Hansen, Representative Hilton? Okay. All right. We're just a couple minutes away. Representative Pepin, why don't you lay out the roadmap for you, and then if you could get your first group down with you, we're ready to roll. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee together. And before us, Representative Pepin, you're bringing House File 9. If I'm not mistaken, Representative Drazkowski, are you a co-author of House File 9? Yeah, do you want to move the bill? Representative Pepin, if I'm not mistaken, the bill is recommended to pass and move to Commerce Committee?
Correct.
And so if you would want to make that motion, Representative Drazkowski, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, I move that the that House File 9 be passed and moved to Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. We have the minutes before us. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like the minutes corrected for spelling error.
Go ahead. Representative Quam, state your correction.
My first name is Dwayne, not Dennis.
And the spelling on that?
Would be correct on this nameplate.
Thank you, Representative Quam. All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That was as amended. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Pepin, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for allowing us to hear this bill and bring it forward today. House File Number 9 simply removes the ban on the construction of new nuclear power facilities, a ban which has been in place in Minnesota for nearly two decades. I bring this bill forward because I'm extremely concerned about meeting our energy needs in the future. The United States Department of Energy has estimated our electricity needs will increase by about 25% by the year 2030. And while that may seem a long way off, if we are to meet that demand, we must start planning now, as the planning and construction process take many years. If we fail to plan and provide the infrastructure we need in the future, we risk not being able to provide the energy needs we've all grown accustomed to, like lights and warm houses, to the people of Minnesota. I understand that there are concerns with nuclear power, and I feel strongly, as many of you do, that we should continue to pursue renewable resources like energy, like wind and solar. But renewables alone cannot get us to where we need to be. They can't meet our energy needs since they are not reliable and must have a backup. Nuclear power currently provides nearly 30% of our electricity in Minnesota and is one of the few sources of baseload power. It must remain part of the energy mix. Mr. Chair and members, thank you again for hearing this bill today. I won't take up a lot of your time because I know there are a lot of testifiers. I just ask that you give thoughtful consideration to this important bill and look forward to a good debate. I'd be happy to take questions later.
Representative Pepin, if I could just interject, it looks like you've got a pretty unique group just looking at the span of it, even though it only includes three people there. Could you just quickly tell us who they represent, who they are? I'd like you to, so that the folks in the audience, instead of waiting, if you could just identify the three testifiers with you and what groups they represent.
Sure. Annette Hankel with the Minnesota Utility Investors, Bride Seifert, Seifert with Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Carrie Milan with Minnesota Board of Trade.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pepin. Please proceed. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Annette Hinkle, and I'm with the Minnesota Utility Investors, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. As you know, many of you know, Minnesota Utility Investors, we are a grassroots organization of about 27,000 members. And many of you have met our members. You know we are the mom-pa retail shareholder, the gray hairs, if you will, in one of the seven investor-owned utilities operating in Minnesota. And on behalf of my members, we strongly encourage you to support House File 9. We are part, and as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, we are part of a very diverse groups of organizations supporting this legislation. The variety includes, as mentioned, the Minnesota State Chamber, the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades, the Pipe Trades, the Mechanical Contractors Association of Minnesota, the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, the Grassroots Organization of Sensible Energy Solutions from Minnesota, Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, the Minnesota Dakotas Chapter, National Electrical Contractors Association, and of course us, the Minnesota Utility Investors. And on behalf of all of us, we've been working together very diligently and support passage of House File 9. And again, I just strongly encourage you to support House File 9. Happy to answer any questions. Again.
Any questions for Ms. Hankel? Go ahead, Ms. Seifert, are you next?
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, thank you. As Annette and Representative Pepin said...
Ms. Seifert, you need to identify yourself for the record.
I'm Bride Seifert with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm their manager of energy policy. The Minnesota Chamber represents over 2,000 businesses, both large and small, throughout the state, and reliable energy futures are important to all of them, as it is to everyone in this room. We're advocating today not to build a plant right now, but to have all of our options on the table. We're advocating for our utilities, our administrative law judges, and our Public Utilities Commission to do their job. And that job is to explore all of the options available and determine what's best for Minnesota's energy needs going forward. Right now, they can't do that job. We're asking you to support House File 9 and lift the nuclear moratorium. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seifert. Any questions? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Seifert, the prohibition that's currently in place is for the issuance of a certificate of need. It's not a prohibition on talking about whether this is a viable option or not. What, in your view, is the difference between having a prohibition for the issuance of a certificate of need in place or not, as far as the behavior of any utility that might be interested in pursuing a nuclear option?
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Hilty, thanks for that question. Part of what the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce does is intervene at the Public Utility Commissions on behalf of business owners. And one of the things we look at is what utilities are spending their money on. They have to be using that money on reasonable and prudent investments. Even exploring the option of nuclear power is going to take a lot of resources from a utility. And if they explore that option and there's no availability that a certificate of need will ever be issued, then there's some folks that would come to the table and say that the utilities can't recover for even exploring that option. And we might actually be one of those groups.
Representative, follow-up, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Seifert, I think that's exactly right. I mean, what this issue is really about is not whether utilities are able to consider this or any other option going forward. The question is whether they're able to charge their ratepayers for the expenses that they incur. You're probably more familiar with the operation of businesses across the state than I am, although I operated a small business for 30 years. But is that standard practice? I mean, it seems to me that most businesses that want to plan for the future do that on their own dime, not being able to charge that ahead of doing anything to their customers.
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Hilty, the utilities, as you know, it's investor-owned utilities are a special makeup. And as you said, there is some resource planning that any business would do, but something as significant and as long-term as investigating nuclear power would be a substantial cost. And I think that what the current moratorium does is prevent a true exploration of that option for them, whether it's for their shareholders or their ratepayers. It really does just prevent a true exploration and a cost-benefit analysis.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These energy issues are somewhat new to me, so I have a question for Ms. Seifert, and it's kind of back to Ms. Henkel as well, that you know, I have a number of seniors in my district that come to the utility investors issue, and we have small business owners. And so this issue of cost, I think, Ms. Seifert, you said that it'll take a lot of resources to explore the option. So when by passing this bill, so then that allows the utilities to charge back the ratepayers for that exploration of the nuclear power option. Is that right?
Maybe a question. Is it a question? Okay, go ahead, Ms. Seifert.
There are other people, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. Two thoughts to that.
Ms. Henkel, sorry.
Seifert mentioned, utilities are very different than a traditional business. They are regulated utilities. There's no competition, and they have their own service territory. So their standard or how they move forward is very different than any other kind of business. And so recognizing that, you can't compare apples to apples, I would argue, to other traditional businesses on how they move forward, because everything they do, they think about, has to be approved by the Public Utilities Commission, and they're very regulated. And as Ms. Seifert mentioned, the cost would be significant. Lifting the moratorium would, at the end, right now with the moratorium in place, we would argue no utility company would even consider exploring it because, as, and there are other people who would testify better, the significant cost to kind of move forward in exploring that and having that as an option for their future energy needs. And we just would agree, we're just trying to lift the moratorium so those options would be available. The cost would be recoverable for any kind of, if a certificate of need was granted, yes. And those would be recoverable. But I would again argue that the commission has all of the tools to determine if the cost is in the ballpark, if it's reasonable, if it's not reasonable. So those are the tools, the flexibility that the commission would have in a very regulated manner to have those make those determinations.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
So that cost would get passed on to the senior citizens on fixed incomes and the small businesses if it was approved.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen, just like any other cost of per utility, not just for nuclear, for wind, renewable energy, those costs are passed on again to senior citizens, to all customers. So just this would be no different than any other type of energy.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to either of the testifiers at the table, I would direct these questions. I guess I'm just curious can you give me some cost numbers, cost per megawatt? What are we looking at for cost for waste storage? Just cost for planning. I know a little bit about renewables and what they cost, and I can do a line-by-line on that pretty well, I think, but can you please help me out with the costs that we're looking at as detailed as possible?
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, Marshall Cohen from the Nuclear Institute is here to talk, and he would be better at actually giving you those answers to the cost questions.
Thank you, Ms. Seifert. Follow-up, Representative Falk.
Thank you. That's, I do understand there's probably some people that have better numbers, but with the comment that you intervene at the PUC on behalf of businesses, like Representative Hilty alluded, I think any business needs to have very clear planning going forward, and so I'm just a little bit nervous that you're flying blind with some of these proposals because you don't know what the costs are going to be. And if you're going to put a $15 billion reactor into the rate base, that $15 billion plus the costs associated with it are going to be absorbed by whether it's Minnesota consumers, whether it's Minnesota taxpayers, whether it's Minnesota businesses. We don't know what that full number is going to be, and so that's what I'm curious about, is how do you derive the policy or how do you derive the understanding that this is good for businesses when you don't know what the costs are going to be?
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, thank you. We do represent, or we do intervene at the PUC, but we also take a look at their integrated resource plan, which are long-term planning. And right now, if and when the moratorium is lifted, some of those costs would be in their long-term planning. So we would look at it before it's built, before anything actually happens. The utilities would be saying, here are some of the costs that would be associated. Here is when we would need this. This is what our portfolio would look like 5, 10, 15 years down the line. So it's not as if it would just be built and then it would be absorbed by ratepayers.
Follow up, Representative.
If I would, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we have, at least in my opinion, there is the ability to talk about nuclear power in the current structure. There is not the ability to issue a certificate of need. Is there any utility that has a need for that type of baseload asset in their long-term plan that is currently on the books?
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, not at this time. As Representative Pepin said, our energy needs will increase in the future, and that's what we're talking about today, is looking long range.
Thank you, Ms. Seifert. Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is probably better for Mr. Cohen when he comes down.
All right. So I think these testifiers are done, Ms. Pepin. Do you have Mr. Cohen? Oh, I'm sorry. Harry, I went right over you. You've been so quiet there, I thought you were already done. Mr. Melander, could you introduce yourself and who you represent?
Yes, sir.
And you could let us know how many are currently on the bench and not working, if you would.
Well, actually, we continue to have greater than 30% of the folks within our organization unemployed. Chairman McNamara, committee members.
You've got to tell us who you are and who you represent again.
I'm Chairman McNamara, committee members. My name is Harry Melander. I'm here on behalf of close to 50,000 members that are part of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades community. As you have heard myself and others over the last 3 years, our industry has experienced depressionary unemployment. Many men and women have been unemployed for over 2 years and counting. But today we're not here to talk about the unemployed. We're here to focus on an option of our energy menu. We're here today wanting to expand Minnesota's energy menu. You've all done a great job over the last years in the House and the Senate expending on our energy menu. Clean fuel projects, renewable goals for the next decade, great work. But we continue to fall short in our ability to have a complete energy menu. Wind, solar, hydro, natural gas, coal, but on the bottom of that page, it's blank. Minnesotans need to have a choice on our energy menu. We Minnesotans are practical people. We try and provide options for our next generation of citizens in all aspects of our life. Clean energy will continue to be a requirement for all Minnesotans and all Americans as this country moves towards into the next century. Let's provide the full meal deal when it comes to energy sources, not to mention the political employment that it can provide to PMers, practical Minnesotans. Thanks for your time today, on building on our energy menu.
Thank you, Mr. Melander. Any questions? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Melander, just to clarify, I'm sure you've thought about this. Given that no one does have any plans on the table currently or has expressed any need for any additional base load in their resource plans through 2025, if jobs materialized because of a future nuclear project in Minnesota, when do you think that could most likely occur?
Mr. Melander.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, all of you that have continued to have this discussion over the years realize that this is long-term planning. For those that have to look in individuals' faces on a regular basis that are unemployed, looking into the future for employment options, which could be 10 to 15 years, may be far-reaching, but it's still a ray of hope for those individuals that at this time, presently, there's no hope at all.
Thank you.
A follow-up on Representative Hilty's question. My granddaughter comes from a family of four generations if she decides to be a pipe fitter. I think she'd like to have all her options open if she wants to be a pipe fitter. Other questions for Mr. Melander? You have one more testifier, I believe, Representative Pepin.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Marshall Cohen. I'm with the Nuclear Energy Institute in Washington, D.C. And I want to thank Representative Pepin for the opportunity to speak to you for a few minutes. Hopefully you have or will have shortly one of these, which has a great deal of information in it, including, given the discussion that just took place, a very deep paper on the cost of generating electricity and with a number of case studies about the cost for new nuclear in several states and the process that took place to determine those costs. Let me come back to costs in just a second, but just very briefly, the United States has 104 nuclear plants that have been operating for quite a number of years. Well over half of them, about 60 of those 104 right now, have been relicensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to operate for another 20 years, and some folks think that could go even for another 20 beyond that. And there's a definite expectation that virtually all or close to all of the 104 will get relicensed. Nuclear provides 20% of the United States electricity. That 20% of production of U.S. electricity accounts for 70% of the clean air emissions by electrical generating facilities in the United States. So there are tremendous environmental benefits from nuclear. They are powerful economic engines with a substantial number of long-term permanent jobs at the plants that pay high salaries and good benefits, thousands of construction jobs to construct these facilities. They are safe. They are reliable. The nuclear fleet in this country runs at 90% capacity day in and day out, have done so for a number of years. The plants in Minnesota easily approach that number as well. They are tremendous baseload electricity. Let me talk for a second about costs and talk for a second about used fuel, because I'm sure that's on some of your minds, and then be happy to answer questions. Nobody can sit here and tell you the cost of a new nuclear plant. Because there are different designs, there are different sites, there are a variety of recommendations. It's a function of a whole lot of things that go into the planning. What's important from my perspective here is that by virtue of having the moratorium, you are preventing a process that will enable you to know what the costs are and what the other impacts of a real proposal, should one come along, would be. If you have a chance to look at this paper, this cost paper, I'd like to just read you one sentence. In South Carolina, in the process that they went through to approve two new reactors that are getting underway there, It said, as part of the Public Service Commission approval process, South Carolina Energy and Gas analyzed a number of strategies for meeting South Carolina's electricity needs. The analysis compared a nuclear, natural gas, and coal strategy and examined various environmental compliance scenarios and fuel prices. In all cases, South Carolina Energy and Gas found nuclear to be the most competitive option over the long run. The point here is that these companies that build these plants are not just nuclear companies. They have a variety of options available to them to construct electricity generating facilities, and they are, you know, private companies, public companies on Wall Street with boards and shareholders, and a tremendous amount of effort goes into determining what facilities should be built, what the costs will be, how they compare to other facilities, how they compare in the regulatory environment, and how they go ahead. And it's not an inexpensive process. So long as there is a moratorium in place, no one is going to make the investment to even give serious consideration to how and where and in what format and what kind of reactor should be put together in Minnesota. So I would encourage you to look at this, and we are available at any time to provide further expertise and information to you about how costs operate. My last point I'd like to make is on used fuel. We know that's a concern, that's an issue in Minnesota. Our industry continues to support the development of Yucca Mountain. The federal government is supposed to show up here by 1998 and take that fuel, so you can see where that is. But we have a lot of confidence that the Blue Ribbon Commission that the Secretary of Energy and the President appointed to look at used fuel in this country will make some good recommendations, the most important maybe of which is that the country move forward to develop one or two interim storage facilities at volunteer communities where all the used fuel, those casks at Prairie Island and everywhere in the country, can be moved to while the country figures out a longer-term strategy of whether it's going to reprocess, recycle used fuel, and where an ultimate repository would be. That report by the Blue Ribbon Commission is being drafted right now. We think it will be public in a few months, and they'll be taking more public testimony on what they recommend. But we are hopeful, and we are working as an industry to develop one or two interim storage sites so the fuel from Prairie Island can be moved. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm more than happy to answer questions if I can.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Questions for Mr. Cohen? Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cohen, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
There's actually a lot I like about nuclear power, and people might be surprised to hear that. I think you've got the comparison of life cycle emissions. This is an older paper. I know there's a 2008 paper by a scientist named Sovacool who did more of a review that found about 14 to about 200 tons CO2 equivalent per gigawatt hour, if you do the numbers right. But it is a lot less than coal. It's a lot less than natural gas, and that's a huge deal, something we really need to be concerned about. I like that it's got a relatively small footprint. I like that we have some of our own uranium, although Canada, Kazakhstan, Australia are much bigger producers of uranium. We definitely don't have any uranium here in Minnesota, so I do think that's a problem. I like the clean air part of it. What makes me really nervous is that we haven't built a plant in how many years has it been since a new plant has come online?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there are four reactors now underway being constructed. It would be the first in about 30 years.
Okay.
And those are expected to come online in 2016, 2017.
Okay.
Follow up, Representative Canoe.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe 2016 would be another time to reconsider this, because in terms of actually making the finance of nuclear power work without billions of dollars of government subsidy or pretty significant rate increases or, frankly, a price on the cost of carbon, which from what I read would be one of the best ways to get new nuclear power plants built. I'm not sure how we saddle Minnesotans with the risk of the most expensive nuclear energy or electric energy potential. So, you know, on those four plants, you know, we've got 5 years now until they're expected to come online. What are the costs looking like? Have there been overruns? What are the utility ratepayers in those states paying before the plants are online?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, a couple of points. One, I understand some conversations or communication from yesterday that there seems to be some sense that the plants in Georgia are experiencing cost overruns. And when I got that information, I went back to my office and went to Southern Company and so forth, and there are, those plants are on schedule, on budget. So they're unfortunately with nuclear, there's oftentimes misinformation that may be around that's not quite accurate, and we can provide more on that situation. The other point I would like to make in response to your question is nuclear, there's no question nuclear plants are expensive to build, but there's also no question, and there's some information in there, that nuclear plants are very inexpensive to operate, and they have very low production costs and long-term costs, and you will find right now that the cost of the plants that will be coming online will the cost per kilowatt hour will be in the neighborhood of 2 cents a kilowatt hour. And that is pretty good cost. So in the Georgia situation, where they got some ratepayer help on interest costs to get off the ground, that helped reduce the overall cost of the plants by $2 billion, reduce the overall cost by $2 billion, which will have a long-term impact on even lower operating costs and therefore ratepayer charges going out 60 years that these plants are going to operate. So you have to look at the totality, and you can't allow yourself to be scared off by whatever number of billion dollars initial cost is going to be. You have to look at what are we getting for this, how long are we getting it for, and what are those costs. And you will find consistently with nuclear that it's very competitive and very low cost. But again, that's the process, it seems to me, your PUC is there to do and to determine, and will never get the chance to do so long as this wall is up and this moratorium is in place. And I mean, our view is that the state has innumerable opportunities to say no. But you don't know what you're saying yes or no to until you allow something to come forward and say, here's what we're thinking, here's how it would work, here's how costs would be, here's how rates would be, here's how used fuel would be managed. No one's going to come forward with that so long as this wall is up. So you and the citizens, I think, do not have the opportunity to consider that.
Representative Hill, I'm sorry.
Just
follow up, Representative Canoe.
And you know, I appreciate that. I'm curious about the 2 cents per kilowatt hour, because that I haven't heard that before, and I would be interested in seeing the material behind it. Maybe it's in one of these papers.
In the booklet that's
Mr. Cohen, if you could get that information to Representative
Canoe,
that'd be great.
Representative
Hill, you got another follow-up?
I'm still concerned about the risk part of it. When we've got 30 years of not having built a nuclear plant, we've got some underway, and you know, I think when Minnesota sees one or maybe a few built, we could be looking at it more there, but we haven't seen it proven in such a huge risky investment that Wall Street is really struggling to finance without major government investment. But you know, I do appreciate your outlining the background about costs.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cohen, am I correct in my understanding that the four projects that you mentioned, the four plants that you mentioned are actually two projects of two reactors each?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct. The Southern Company in Georgia is building two at their Vogtle site. South Carolina, Edison Gas and SCANA are building two at their site in South Carolina.
Hey, Mr.
Representative Hilty.
Do you know what the pre-planning, the pre-construction costs for either of those projects were?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Mr. Cohen.
I do not, but I can get those for you. They'll be different for each situation.
Representative Hilty, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cohen, are you aware of any nuclear project that has been built or is in planning to be built anywhere that has not depended on very substantial subsidies from government subsidies, taxpayer subsidies?
Mr. Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I certainly am. I was very much involved in a $3 billion nuclear facility that is now operating in southeast New Mexico that was entirely built with private money. Secondly, I would urge your careful consideration of the term subsidies. It's another piece of information that gets kind of slapped on the nuclear industry. The federal government has a program of loan guarantees that President Obama is very supportive of. Loan guarantees is not a federally written check of taxpayers' money to a company. It is only a backing, a securitization, if you will, of financing that comes through Wall Street and other ways.
Representative Hill, do you follow up?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cohen, my understanding is that the estimates in the industry are that the $54 billion in loan guarantees that are currently available at the federal level are estimated to be sufficient to guarantee or to fund six projects.
Comment,
being
Mr.
that there
Cohen?
Isn't anything yes. beyond that.
Representative Hilty.
I tend to agree with Representative Knuth that maybe the prudent course would be to wait and see what happens with any of these projects. As far as I'm aware, there's a lot of rhetoric around new designs and new methods of construction, et cetera, that have not been demonstrated anywhere at this point.
And Mr. Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, a couple of points. Currently, the loan guarantee program is only at a number of $18 billion, which was the original number. The President proposed $36 billion in additional funds, which has not been acted upon by Congress. The NRC has adopted a new program of certifying designs for nuclear reactor plants, and there will be probably no more than four or five designs certified, Westinghouse, General Electric, Areva, and so forth. What that means is that contrary to the current fleet that was developed in the 60s and 70s, which you have 104 plants with a myriad of designs, nobody is even going to be able to come into the NRC with an application or a proposal without a certified design. And those certified designs means quite a bit in terms of standardization of safety, construction, and so forth. And that is what is happening. And so the Vogtle plants in Georgia will get their license this year. The South Carolina plants probably this year or next year. And you will soon see that. But again, the time frame here, as was mentioned earlier, is a long time frame. And, you know, yes, you could postpone this debate and decision for 5 or 10 years, but I'm not sure what you gain by that, because you still have all the processes in place to say no. And as I like to say, there isn't a reactor sitting on a barge in Lake Superior or sitting over in Fargo waiting to drive in tomorrow and plug it in. It doesn't work that way. It's a long, long process. And ample opportunity.
Thank you,
to
Mr.
look
Cohen.
At things.
If you could keep your answer short, that'll help us. Sorry. Because we do want to allow time for the citizens. The citizens intend to testify today before 10 o'clock, and we want to allow them ample time to come forward and speak. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cohen, I've got a question about, you said that the initial outlays are expensive, if not very expensive, but the ongoing costs are maybe a little bit more bearable or manageable. Do you know what the equivalent operating costs would be for fuel source for renewables such as wind or solar?
Mr. Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I have to go back and look at the chart that we have in the booklet that says nuclear facts that I provided to you. There is a chart towards the end of that book that compares production costs and operating costs of a number of sources, whether I'm not sure if renewables is in there, but we can get that for you.
If you could get that, Mr. Cohen, Representative
Falk,
that would help him. He's got a strong interest in the wind industry, so if you could center around that, be great. A follow-up, Representative Falk?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I look at it because I do have a little bit of background in the wind industry, that basically the maintenance you have is going to be a biannual, or you're servicing twice a year, but essentially your fuel cost is nothing because you are using the wind, or in case of solar, it's sun. And so when we talk about costs, we have to realize that this does have a fuel cost versus renewables that oftentimes have no fuel cost, and it's the very minimal amount of maintenance that you have to do on an annual or biannual basis.
Thank you, Representative, for that. The next we're going to hear from Representative Beard. Did you have one quick question?
Follow up to this point, if I may, Mr. Chair, because while the wind blows and it doesn't cost, nobody sends you a bill for the wind, nonetheless, there still is standby power that has to be built, and somebody's got to absorb that cost. Somehow in the wind discussion, we never account for standby power and the cost of having labor, land, and money tied up waiting for the wind not to blow. That's a whole other discussion we need to have about that.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Next, we're going to hear from Steve Morris and Bill Grant. And Mr. Morris, if you need to set your PowerPoint up, and you're not going to, okay.
Yes.
And then if you would just be sure you allow time for questions, if there are some from members in your testimony, because we do want to hear. We have, I believe we're going to do Prairie Island. I see they've got through the bad weather from and are have arrived. So I think you're going to be next after Mr. Morris and Mr. Grant's group. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Morris. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and I'm very pleased to be here today, and thank you for the opportunity to share some of the thoughts of our organizations with you today on this important issue. I understand the Chair's commitment to move forward with this, but we appreciate having the opportunity to be on the record. I was here in the legislature, is it now 17 years ago, when this moratorium was put in place. And I see a lot of familiar faces in the crowd. Good to see all of you again. See a lot of new faces. But what I want to talk a little bit about today is what our 80-plus organizations in the Minnesota Environmental Partnership feel about this issue and what they think about this issue. Our organizations, our environmental conservation organizations, covering the gamut of groups and representing more than 450,000 Minnesotans. I want to make 3 points and then go into it in 3 areas. Minnesota has a strong policy foundation to protect our state's health, air, land, and water. And even in these difficult times, it's very clear that Minnesotans believe we should maintain these protections and not roll them back. As good stewards of our clean air, safe energy, we must stay on track with a responsible, clean, renewable energy agenda. One of our concerns, and that's part of the discussion you just had, is that by tipping our hands, favoring nuclear power, that we may in fact undermine the resurgence of jobs that we're getting in the renewable energy sector. And lastly, it's clear, according to the statewide poll that we did shortly after the election, that Minnesotans support the existing law which prohibits new nuclear power plants to be built at this time. And they strongly support expanding renewables such as wind and solar. What I'd like to do is touch a little bit on the history, status, and then the position and polling, if I could. And the history, I know sometimes we get impatient with a little history, but the old adage about either we learn from history or we're doomed to repeat it could not be more true. Because we had an interesting dialogue in 1994, and in fact, we passed into law, and I believe it's been handed out, intent, the legislative finding section of our current law that was passed in 1994. And we had, when this was being discussed in the, I was on the Senate Environmental Policy Committee, we had a standoff for a while, and the bill was delayed for a while. And ultimately what happened is the bill which allowed NSP to move forward and do the dry cask storage in the state had a number of conditions added to it. And this was one of the conditions that was added by this majority of the committee that allowed the bill to go ahead but said, we think these issues are so important that we need to go ahead and put some conditions on it. And if you look at the findings, and I believe these have been passed out. I'm not sure if you have them, they were supposed to be. But at any rate, what the findings say is that the legislature finds that we have enormous uncertainty and enormous costs, and that although these costs and uncertainties are out there, we do not feel it warrants closing existing plants, but we certainly feel that we should put a moratorium on new plants. And that's in current law, and in fact, with this legislation, would still stay in current law. These conditions are so important that the legislature decided to include them, and because what we had at that time was a story that said, you know, as we just heard, it was 1994, and by 1998, the federal government will have some waste facilities. And in fact, the testimony at the time by NSP, which was our the precursor to Xcel Energy, said that, you know, they expect that maybe by 2010 we'd actually have the waste storage in place. As you know, that plan has been derailed. In 2009, Secretary Chu basically said Yucca Mountain is off the table. Last year, DOE withdrew its application for licensing for Yucca Mountain. So the storage that was going to be a temporary solution to our waste problems has grown now to 34 casks. We have extensions and expansion still on tap, and we have no immediate plan to deal with that waste. It reminds me of the adage former majority or minority leader Dwayne Benson used to say quite a bit in the Senate from a little tavern outside of Lanesboro. He said there's this tavern you go into, and it always has this sign that says, "Free beer tomorrow." And that's kind of what I feel where we're at with the nuclear industry is free beer tomorrow. We'll take care of it tomorrow. We'll kick the can down the road a little bit further and just let us keep moving forward. And what we'd suggest is that the underlying issues that brought this to such a head 17 years ago have not gone away. As a matter of fact, their resolution has gone further and further away, and the issues have just gotten worse. With the existing ban in place, there's nothing that limits discussion. In fact, that's what we're having here today. There's nothing that limits analysis of opportunities. What it does is it protects the ratepayers so that we as ratepayers of Xcel Energy are not left paying for the exploration, the research, the analysis of what might be done for a utility to think about moving forward with a nuclear power plant. So it's a very basic position we have, is talk about it all you'd like, but don't make us pay for it. As a Xcel Energy ratepayer, I appreciate that very much. As we've heard already, and Mr. Grant will touch on again, there's no need that's been forecast for these plants. As far out as the utilities are looking, there's no need for new baseload power. We want to strongly encourage our utilities to meet future demand as Minnesotans would like to see you meet it, which is with natural gas, renewables such as coal, excuse me, not coal, such as wind and solar, and even biomass. And as I indicated, the ban is opposed by Minnesotans. And is this PowerPoint going to work? They say no. Okay, but I do have a little handout while it's being prepared. Is it possible to get this distributed in a timely manner? As many of you know, at Minnesota Environmental Partnership, we do polling at least once a year. And this year, shortly after the election, we went into the field and did an extensive polling of 701 Minnesotans. And it's done, and it's important to point out, it's done by a national bipartisan polling firm of people who work on conservation and political issues around the country. And the methodology is laid out in the slide. And so we make sure we have a bipartisan input in the questions as well as the execution of the poll. And we asked Minnesotans, we said, you know, currently we have this law in place that says that we cannot construct new nuclear power plants. And we simply asked them the questions in the polling, do you support the current law or would you like to see new plants allowed, new nuclear plants allowed in Minnesota? And by a 20-point margin, Minnesotans say they support what we have. 57-37, you'll see that in the handout, they support it, which is a pretty good margin, which is a very good margin. But even more important is the intensity. In public polling, when you get up over 40% of people feeling strongly about anything, it's kind of a tipping point from a social perspective. And 45% of Minnesotans say that they strongly support prohibiting new plants. And the other part that's interesting about this is I included on your slides a little bit of a breakdown of the demographics on this. And what's interesting is that it holds true across party, whether it be Democrat, Independent, or Republican, different majorities, but a strong majority in all cases. It holds across gender. More women than men support the existing law, but it holds across both genders. And gender by party is almost the same all the way, with the one exception being Independent men, who are more balanced in that. They're nearly tied at 49 in favor of lifting it and 47 again. So the bottom line is that the prohibition that we have in place has worked well for the years it's been in place. As you've heard and you'll hear more, there's no compelling need. There's no new need for this. And so the question we'd ask is why would we be pursuing that at this juncture? It's not needed. It's not now. Not now. And there's nothing that has changed that significantly changes the case against nuclear power. And we would ask the legislature to not support the legislation and to move forward to other issues.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Question? Mr. Grant, if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Grant. I'm the Associate Executive Director of the Isaac Walton League of America. Thanks for the opportunity to comment on House File 9, which would repeal Minnesota's 16-year-old ban on the construction of new nuclear plants. I'm going to argue that lifting the ban is unnecessary and creates certain risks. First of all, lifting the ban is unnecessary because utilities, as you've heard, don't have a need for new baseload power for the foreseeable future. Nuclear, by estimates from the well-respected Energy Information Administration, are 2 to 3 times more expensive than the next cheapest option. No new jobs will be created for many years. While the path we're on now to focus on renewable energy and energy efficiency is creating jobs every day right now. However, lifting the ban will create real risks that utilities will saddle ratepayers with pre-construction planning and engineering costs, as is going on now in states like Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina, for plants that may never be completed. The risk in wasting time and resources of our already overworked regulatory agencies, the Public Utilities Commission, and the Office of Energy Security. And finally, the risk of taking the pressure off the federal government to solve the long-term waste storage problem. If we go ahead and build more plants without a plan in place to store waste, I believe that that takes pressure off the federal government to solve the problem now. Let me go into a little bit more detail on each of these points. First of all, utilities have no need for nuclear power. We've evaluated Minnesota's utility integrated resource plans for all the utilities in the state, and none show a need for new baseload power through the year at least 2024. New baseload will instead come from, to the extent that it's needed, will come from uprates to existing nuclear and coal plants, new hydroelectric power from Canada, and a combination of gas, wind, and energy efficiency that is already providing power that's comparable to baseload today. In fact, gas, wind, and efficiency has the advantage of being much less expensive with shorter permitting and construction lead times, more modular operations, and a lot less controversy with the public. Second point is that nuclear is too expensive. It's really not surprising, Mr. Chairman, that no Minnesota utilities and very few utilities nationally are proposing to build new nuclear plants. New nuclear is projected to cost between $5 and $10 billion for a 1,000-megawatt plant, which would be a typical size for a new nuclear plant. Compare that to the cost of coal with integrated gasification combined cycle, like the plant that was proposed for northeastern Minnesota, the Excelsior plant, at something closer to $3.5 billion. Natural gas combined cycle plants, which can be built for roughly $1 billion, again at 1,000 megawatts in size. And perhaps most competitively, energy efficiency at a cost of less than 2 cents per kilowatt hour, offering services to Minnesotans today. The nuclear industry is struggling nationally, and I'll point you to testimony that's in your packets written by the well-respected former chair of the New York State Public Utilities Commission, Peter Bradford. He argues that all 31 reactor applications submitted to the NRC since 2007 have experienced some combination of cost overruns, delays, suspensions, or outright cancellations, and no new plants are even close to being operational. Only 4 reactors, as you've heard, are being currently pursued, all in Georgia and South Carolina, where customers are already footing the bill for pre-construction costs many years before the plants will be in service, if they ever come into service. And no new reactor applications were received in 2010, and none are likely to be received in 2011. We've also heard arguments about jobs being created by new nuclear plant. Again, I'll point you to the Bradford testimony. Raising rates for commercial and industrial customers, which adding new nuclear would almost certainly do for expensive and unneeded plants, will kill jobs, not create them, Mr. Chairman. At best, new nuclear jobs are at least 15 to 20 years away, while jobs in the renewable, efficiency, and natural gas sectors are shovel-ready today. The argument that the ban keeps utilities and policymakers from exploring the nuclear option is also without merit. we are talking about nuclear power. In fact, it's difficult to imagine an issue that we've spent more time talking about, Mr. Chairman, over the last 2 years. Nothing prevents utilities from studying nuclear and sharing those results with regulators. The ban only prevents utilities from charging customers for such studies. New nuclear plant cost estimates are widely available and can easily be plugged into utility planning models at very little cost. There is no real cost associated with this. The model results will inevitably show that new nuclear would dramatically increase Minnesota electric rates. And finally, Mr. Chairman, removing the ban doesn't solve the problem that created the ban in the first place. We have no solution to the long-term storage of nuclear waste. For all these reasons, the Isaac Walton League opposes House File 9. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Questions? Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Grant, when Mr. Cohen was up there, he did acknowledge that building a new nuclear plant was expensive, but he never put the dollar amount on the table. And I just, so it's my understanding that the plants going in South Carolina are projected at this point to cost $9.6 billion. And the plants going on in Georgia are projected to cost $14 billion. Is that correct?
Mr. Grant or Mr. Morris?
And Representative Wagenius,
Mr. Grant.
That is my understanding of the cost estimates. What I think you need to bear in mind is that those are estimates of future costs once the plants are completed. I think those are very speculative numbers, and the only direction those numbers have been going is up.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Follow-up, Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so what's happening in South Carolina right now is that ratepayers are already in the process of paying, on average, 2.5% a year for the next 10 years. That's more than a 25% rate increase, and that is not enough, and because the utilities already asked for more. And in Georgia, rates have gone. The utility first said it's going to be only $1.30 a month in 2011, and now the utility wants $3.73 a month. But in 4 years, it wants $9 a month increase in people's rates. Are my figures correct?
Again, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Grant,
Representative Wagenius, I believe that those numbers are correct, and those will pale in comparison to the costs once those plants actually go into service, if they do.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Hi.
Follow up, Representative Wagenius.
Well, the final thing is nobody has mentioned the Constellation Energy plant that was proposed in Maryland, and that looked like it was going to be one of these new generation. And it is my understanding that Constellation Energy pulled back under pressure from its investors because nobody would buy the electricity because it was coming in too expensively. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, and again, Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Grant.
Exactly the case, and the same thing is happening, of course, to large coal plants being proposed around the country. Investors don't want any part of them.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Next, we're going to hear from the Prairie Island folks. Ms. President Winfrey is going to come forward. The Prairie Island community is located between Hastings and Red Wing, right immediately adjoining the existing Prairie Island plant. They have been given 5 minutes to testify. The rest of the testifiers will be considered 2 minutes in total in their testimony, because we want to reach out. It was our goal by 9:20 to hear from the citizens of Minnesota, any of those that haven't testified in either of the two groups previous. When we have a list, and I'm just going to whip through it real quick, excuse me, Ms. Winfrey, but I've got a Dan Bender from the city of Red Wing, Mr. Haney from the IBEW, Mr. Davis, Mr. Crocker, and Ms. DeCray. If you have other people that intend to testify, if you could check in with one of the pages, and if the pages could just raise their hand so we know who they are. Ms. Winfrey, welcome. It was a little bit of a tough ride in, so I appreciate you letting us know. You ran a little late, but you were here in plenty of time. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Victoria Winfrey, and I am president of the Prairie Island Indian Community Tribal Council. thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Today, you are discussing legislation that poses grave concern for all the members of the Prairie Island community. My community has been living in the shadow of the Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant for nearly four decades. We are among the closest communities in the nation to a nuclear power plant and its above-ground nuclear storage waste site. The plant's two reactors, 29 nuclear waste storage casks, and 725 tons of nuclear waste sit just 600 yards from our homes. No other community in Minnesota should have to live in fear of nuclear power and nuclear waste the way our community does. Make no mistake, Minnesota's nuclear moratorium is unquestionably about nuclear waste and the understandable fear Minnesota's host communities have towards nuclear waste storage in their backyards. Until a permanent national solution for dealing with nuclear waste is found, we oppose lifting Minnesota's moratorium on construction of new nuclear power plants or new reactors at existing plants. Why are we fearful of nuclear waste storage just across the road? Well, for 38 years, despite repeated safety assurances, the Prairie Island Nuclear Plant has been a major safety, health, and environmental concern to our community. Prairie Island is one of the oldest operating nuclear plants in the nation and has suffered two radiological leaks as well as tritium leaks and contamination. Approximately 725 tons of high-level radioactive nuclear waste is stored in the plant's 29 dry casks, which sit on a cement pad in the floodplain of the Mississippi River. Consider the storage location in the coming weeks as spring flooding projections are released. The plant's high voltage power lines run directly adjacent to many homes in our community. Hazardous materials and equipment are transported to and from the plant and near or through our community on a regular basis. Whether related to improperly transporting radioactive equipment, the loss of radioactive tools, or findings of declining human performance at the plant by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, numerous operating errors are extremely frightening to the citizens of the Prairie Island community. Even without lifting the state's moratorium, if the plant is relicensed for an additional 20 years, as Xcel has proposed, 69 new casks will be necessary, bringing the total number of casks at Prairie Island to 98. That is nearly 2,500 tons of nuclear waste that could likely be stored at Prairie Island for generations. With the lifting of the moratorium and thus the prospect of a new plant in the state or new reactors at existing sites, the amount of hazardous waste that must be stored in our local communities will only grow. 29 years after Congress passed the Nuclear Waste Policy Act and mandated the establishment of a national nuclear waste repository, the future of the nation's nuclear waste disposal program remains very much in doubt. The proposed spent fuel repository at Nevada's Yucca Mountain has suffered numerous political and bureaucratic setbacks, and most recently has been abandoned by the Obama administration. It has become painfully clear that Yucca Mountain will likely never open. Our community and other communities in Minnesota and across America have been left with a horrible realization about so-called temporary nuclear waste storage near our homes. Where nuclear waste is stored today is where it will be stored in the future, and where nuclear waste is generated in the future is where it will stay for generations.
Ms. Winfrey, if you could wrap up in about one more minute, okay. That would be great.
In 1994, the Minnesota legislature approved the state's nuclear expansion moratorium as a promise and commitment to host communities as part of decision to allow on-site nuclear waste storage. Similarly, 30 years ago, the federal government made a promise to move the nation's nuclear waste to a safe and secure facility. As we sit here today, the federal government has broken its promise, and the legislation puts Minnesota on a path to break its promise as well. Before Minnesota embraces a nuclear power resurgence, the Prairie Island Indian community believes the promise made to host communities should be honored, and the federal government should solve the nuclear waste storage issue once and for all. Until that happens, the state would be irresponsible to entertain building new nuclear power plants or new reactors at existing plants. And thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winfrey. I just wanted to make a couple comments, Ms. Winfrey. I want you to know that my office is always open to you and anyone on the Tribal Council, including my fellow former co-worker, Ed Tuffy Buck, and say hello to Tuffy if
yes,
you
sir.
Would. And make sure, as someone who grew up in the Hastings Prairie Island community and remember the days of the fast pitch softball and many of your folks playing in Hastings in the days, I will always be someone who will be interested in your concerns and where we've been, where we are today, and where we're going forward, including the very important issue of the nuclear plant so close to your homes. So thank you for coming forward, and I'm very sincere that we will have a very direct, open, and good dialogue between you and I and everybody in your community. Thank you, and say hello to the folks down there.
I will.
Questions?
Thank you for your kind words, and we will probably be visiting you in the future.
Well, I look forward to it. Any questions for Ms. Winfrey? Well, thank you. I think the next testifier, Mr. Haney, you're right there in the back row, if you could come forward. Mr. Haney is from IBEW. If you could state who you are and who you represent and the number of people on the bench currently. I know my brother Jamie and my cousin Brian are both working. Brian spent, I think, a year on the bench and was traveling across. They're both master. Is that what you call it? Master when you're above a journeyman? Master electrician?
Yes.
Yeah, so I just got to be sure. And how many people are currently on the bench and your name and who you represent?
Mr. Chair, I'm Bill Haney with the IBEW Minnesota State Council. We have over 15,000 members scattered across the state, virtually in every house district in the state. There's about 35%, 40% unemployment with the building trade side of our union, the electricians. However, this bill is not going to impact their status at all. We are supporting passage of the bill, repeal of the moratorium. We believe it doesn't really have much practical effect either way, and it's more of a symbolic a law, and that it would just take away a lot of divisive discussion by getting it off the books and using the existing regulatory system and laws to process whatever we do in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haney. Questions for Mr. Haney? Well, thank you. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Leslie Davis. Mr. Davis, if you could identify for yourself for the record, and you've got about 2 minutes. We'd like part of that 2 minutes to be time for questions, if possible.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Leslie Davis with the Earth Protector Environmental Group, and thanks for the chance to speak today. I was at the University of Minnesota seeing what's going on politically with the environmental movement, you know, and I went out there with my sign, and the young people, new generation of folks I haven't met with in a while, they say, what are nookies? I said, I said, well, these are not nookies. I said, they're nukes. They said, well, what's that all about? So we've got a big job in front of us, those that are opposed to the expansion of nookie plants. So I want to let you know that we're going to continue the battle. But it's disheartening to know that the first thing that would come before this brand new committee of the Republican leadership would be lifting a moratorium that's been in place for decades. When there were chances to come before this committee and talk about jobs that could be created right away by squeezing down our energy consumption, by eliminating all the waste, you come forward and lifting a moratorium, which I'm pretty confident is going to go forward at this point. When I was on the campaign trail this past year, I heard Republican after Republican, because that's where I went, talk about ending subsidies. We don't want subsidies, and we don't want subsidies for ethanol and people using their charity cards in Hudson, Wisconsin to buy cigarettes. So if you're against subsidies, how could you support nuclear power? Excuse me, one of the greatest subsidized environmental tragedies in America today. So this hearing should have been about squeezing down our energy consumption. And I hope you pull yourselves together and really get a focus on what's needed in the state of Minnesota. And that's jobs and a protected environment and what's that the people want. We don't want more nuclear power. And that message should have been real clear. Well, it's about payola and politics, not about a protected environment and caring for the people.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. And if you could just stay there for a minute in case anybody has any questions. I just wanted to clarify one thing. You maybe didn't catch it, but we had a hearing last week, one of the few committees that met immediately the day after we got gaveled into session on Tuesday. We had a great hearing here on Wednesday morning from Professor Deborah Schwackhammer on a 25-year study about clean water report. That was a priority of this committee, and it'll continue to be the priority of this committee. It's an Environment, Energy, and Natural Resource Committee, and I made my living in the environment, and we're going to continue to concentrate on the environment, and that was our priority, and it'll continue to be.
So you're saying clean air and clean water is going to be the priority committee, but you're going to lift the moratorium on nuclear power, and you don't see any contradiction there?
Thank you, Mr. Davis. The committee is going to vote at some time today on what they do. It's not my decision what we do. It's the committee's decision.
Well, you're the leader
questions
of the committee,
for Mr.
and
Davis.
It still couldn't come before the committee
Representative
if you
Purcell.
Didn't promote it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to offer, I think maybe based on Mr. Davis' testimony here, we might need to refer this bill to education. Sounds like we have some sparsity there in some of the young people.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. We're glad to have you still on the committee. We need a little levity. We don't have Representative Hoppe here now, so that's good to see. Other questions?
I thought I did levity at the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Davis, for your testimony. Next, we'd like to hear from George Crocker, who's with the North America Water Office, it says, Mr. Crocker. If you could come down and limit your testimony to 2 minutes, that'd be terrific. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is George Crocker. I'm the executive director of the North American Water Office, which was formed in 1982 to help educate people about problems associated with wastes that impact our environment, with a particular focus on electric utility waste. So we've been around this block for a long time. And I think what I would like to share with the committee today has to do with the fact that most opponents of nuclear power use the argument that we shouldn't lift this moratorium because there's no solution to the nuclear waste issue. They're partially correct. We don't have a solution to the solid nuclear waste issue, the irradiated fuel rods. But you have to understand that when you explode U-235 atoms to get the heat to make the steam to spin the turbines, you're creating everything on the periodic chart. Remember physics? Everything on the periodic chart is created. And all of the radioactive sons and daughters of all of those elements is created in some fraction when you blow up uranium atoms. And some of those are gases, and some of those are liquids. And we have been using a strategy to manage those gaseous and liquid wastes since the beginning. And that strategy has to do with just putting it into the air and into the water. Now, the problem with that is that the National Academies of Sciences has said in their BEER 7 report, BEER stands for Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation, that there's no safe dose of radiation, no safe dose. Yet we're pumping this waste into the air and the water that we use to breathe and drink routinely. It's reported to the NRC. So what I would suggest as a constructive suggestion would be an amendment to this bill to lift the moratorium. That's okay, lift the moratorium. But how about if we do the monitoring of the radionuclides that are released, and we know how to do this with infinite precision. Remember the spy that got killed with in Europe, and they tracked him months later because of the polonium that was involved with that. We can track minute amounts of radiation for long periods of time. We could track the radiation, the plumes, the hot spots from the routine releases, and do that with sufficient understanding so that we'd know where the hot spots are, who's living there, who's suffering from it, and attach that kind of amendment onto this bill. It already passed the House.
Thank you, Mr.
It passed the House a couple years ago.
You could wrap it up.
With Representative Clark's committee, it passed the floor of the House. With that kind of an amendment, Mr. Chairman, you would actually have served your interest in clean air and clean water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Questions for Mr. Crocker? Okay, a couple things I had skipped over. Is the City of Red Wing and Mr. Bender here? I apologize if they are here. Thank you. I apologize. Come forward. Mr. Bender is one of the council members for the City of Red Wing. And sorry, I went right by you. If you could, 2 minutes to testify, okay. Council member. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Bender. I am a Red Wing City Council member. I am testifying on behalf of the Red Wing City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important legislation. As you all know, one of Minnesota's two nuclear power plants is located in the city of Red Wing. Our community is tremendously grateful for hosting the power plant. It has provided high-paying jobs and low-cost electricity to our state for decades. The city is supportive of lifting the nuclear moratorium, but is hoping that the legislation that you ultimately adopt is more than symbolic. The fact is that nuclear moratoria throughout the country are not the reason nuclear power is stalled and will continue to remain so. The problem is that the federal government has not fulfilled its decades-long promise to remove the waste, and the status quo has created too much uncertainty to foster a sustainable and healthy industry. On this point, I think it's instructive to look at France. In France, nuclear power is a healthy and vibrant industry that supplies more than 75% of the French people's power. The reason for this is because they have a solution to nuclear waste. They reprocess it. We too could have a vibrant industry, but it's going to take the federal government getting pushed to adopt a real strategy for addressing it. In repealing the moratorium, we think you must also address the long-term waste issue. We believe you should do the following. First, direct Minnesota's Attorney General to sue the United States Department of Energy for its failure to abide by federal law and open Yucca Mountain. Second, direct the state to conduct a comprehensive evaluation of the costs of storing waste on site for potentially hundreds of years. And third, ensure that the hundreds of millions in proceeds from lawsuits filed by Xcel Energy are returned to Minnesota ratepayers. The city believes that in removing the moratorium, you should take the opportunity to engage in the real debate about nuclear power. By addressing the waste issue, even in this minimal way, we believe that you actually will be laying the groundwork for advancing nuclear power in the future.
Thank you, Councilman. Questions for the council member? Thank you. I think the last citizen testifier I have is Kathy DeCray. Is there any other citizens or anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill? Could you raise your hand at this time and let the pages know? Sir, if you could let the pages know. Is there anybody else? There's one individual raise their hand. Okay. Mr. Cray, and then if the pages could get the gentleman's name, that'd be great. Welcome, Mr. Cray.
Hi. Oh. Thank you for having me today. My name is Kathy DeCray.
You can speak directly into the mic. That'd be great.
Are you good?
Yep, you're good now.
Great. My name is Kathy DeCray, and I grew up in Bemidji, and am now currently a student at Augsburg College, as well as the board chair of the Minnesota Public Interest in Research Group, or better known as MPIRG. MPIRG was started in 1971, so we're celebrating our 40th this year, and has always been a grassroots, nonpartisan, nonprofit, student-directed organization that empowers and trains students to engage the community and take collective action in the public interest throughout the state. We currently represent 70,000 students, as well as an active community base of 50,000 citizens in the state of Minnesota. I am here today on behalf of the strong membership base, but perhaps most importantly, for the student voice that MPIRG represents. We want you to know that as a generation that is going to inherit the environmental problems created today, we are strongly opposed to lifting the ban on the nuclear moratorium. We demand that as a state, we start to look for real clean energy solutions. Nuclear is not one of those options. Although nuclear does not create carbon emissions that have to be dealt with, there is still an enormous waste storage challenge that will be passed on for thousands of years and generations to come. By lifting the nuclear moratorium, you are imposing an almost never-ending problem on the future of Minnesota. There is absolutely no good reason to have toxic nuclear waste stored in our home state. By lifting the moratorium, we are opening the floodgates to have an even more nuclear waste affecting our communities.
Thank you, Mr. DeCray. If you could just wrap it up real quickly.
Oh,
thank you.
That is just fine. Today, as you are making your decisions, the students and future of Minnesota wants you to consider us, the inheritors of the state, and keep the moratorium on the nuclear power plant in place. Thank you so much for your time, and if you have any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. DeCray? Thank you. And I believe, actually, is Mr. Casey? That may have been. Thank you, Mr. Casey. You weren't sure you were going to make it. Tom Casey from the board of West Metro Global Action Warming Group will speak. Mr. Casey, you've got 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I initially deleted my name because I thought we'd have to wait here until 4:30, so I appreciate the time you've given me now. I won't spend more time than 2 minutes. I wanted to talk about taxpayer efficiency and the cost of government today in front of you, because our organization, the West Metro Global Warming Action Group, are volunteers. Nobody's paid. We have a website, and our arguments that we provided to other House committee and Senate committees in the past 2 years prior to now are on our website, West Metro Global Warming Action Group, or WMGWAG.org, has the arguments why this should not go forward. I want to talk to you about saving time in this legislature. The Republicans have come into power, and we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, so I'm talking on both sides here, is that you've come into power about trying to save taxpayer dollars. We've been here now the third time talking about why we should lift this moratorium, and it's been defeated in the past. We'd like you to keep it that way. And the reason why I'm saying that is that because we're all spending time here, many people paid to come here. I have a letter from Mark Dayton, who wrote to me back on January 5th, 2010, shortly after our organization asked him about his position on the moratorium. And I'm going to quote to you, and I'll provide this to the record. Thank you for your letter. This is to me, Tom Casey. Thank you for your letter on December 29, 2009, and your query about my position on nuclear power. I would be glad to add your suggested statement to my website. Well, he did, in 2 weeks, put on his website that he supports the moratorium. He goes on to say, this has long been my position. In talking about IBEW today, he said that in support of keeping the moratorium in place. I answered a recent questionnaire by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, which supports repealing the moratorium thusly. Okay, now, these are his quotes to the IBEW. I would not support such a repeal unless the federal government properly resolves the present national crisis over the absence of permanent storage for existing spent nuclear fuel, which presents enormous environmental and public safety risks, unquote. I was told that the position I took, this is Dayton saying, the position he took would cost me their endorsement, which it did, so he did not get the IBEW endorsement. This is this final paragraph. After my years of experience in the U.S. Senate dealing with the strong bipartisan opposition to nuclear waste storage site in Yucca Mountain and the absence of any other proposal, I seriously doubt that my condition will be met during my time as governor, if ever. It's been on his website. I think you're just facing a veto. Please save our time, our taxpayer dollars, as you've done so far. You've cut some of your living budgets. Please save taxpayer dollars and not move this forward, and let's get on to business that both parties can agree to and can sign up as law. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Questions for Mr. Casey? Thank you. Representative Pepin, if you want to have the final word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I truly appreciate the opportunity to bring forward the bill. I think we had a great debate today, a lot of discussion. I know there are a lot of people that have concerns about storage and safety issues and things like that. You know, again, I just want to reiterate why this is important to me. I have young kids. I'm concerned about their energy needs in the future. I had a statistic from the U.S. Department of Energy, and that statistic was that even if we had 100% license renewal of all of the power plants we currently have, U.S. nuclear capacity will fall off rapidly by the mid-2030s and essentially be non-existent by mid-century. So my concern is that if we're getting more than 20% of our energy from nuclear power now, our energy demands are increasing by 25% in the next 20 years, 50% perhaps in the next 30, 40 years. That need has to be met somehow. If our energy needs are, if our nuclear power capacity completely falls off, where are we going to get that baseload power? There aren't a lot of baseload choices. We have a moratorium on coal in Minnesota as well. So now we've got a moratorium on coal and nuclear. And I don't know about your constituents, but my constituents are pretty happy with the fact that they can turn on their lights and they have warm houses. And, you know, really all we're doing is, if you look at the bill, it's just striking one line. All it says is we're basically striking that the commission may not issue a certificate of need for the construction of a new nuclear power electric generating plant. That's it. That's all we're doing. We're not starting the construction of a plant tomorrow. We're saying let's look at all of our energy options. Let's keep. I'm not opposed to renewables. I'm not opposed to any of our options, but let's keep them all on the table. By keeping this moratorium in place, we're potentially doing the state a great deal of damage in our future. And we'll have a lot more discussion on this, I'm sure, but I just ask you to thoughtfully consider that we really need to look, keep everything open, and we need to consider our baseload power needs. And
thank
I respectfully ask for your vote on House.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Representative.
Representative Wagenius, if you could go through the chair. Thank you. You were addressing Representative Pepin directly. If you could just go, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin.
I'm sorry.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. We may well have to build new electric generation, but I honestly can't understand why you are promoting the most expensive and the most risky way to produce new electricity. Electricity from wind was the least cost from 2000 to 2009. We all know that. Gas is the least cost right now, and it's only slightly more expensive than wind. Representative Zellers, when he met with us and gave his speech, which he pledged something to Minnesotans, and he said, and I wrote it down so I would get it right, treat every one of your tax dollars that you send to us with the same common sense and frugality used around the kitchen table. This bill abandons that common sense and frugality. So I want the folks in my district to know that I am looking out for their electric rates. For that reason, Mr. Chair, I am going to ask for a roll call so that folks, I can go on record saying to the folks in my district, there is no reason, well, let's see. If we get new electricity, and we will, let's have electricity that we can afford.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I fully understand that there are concerns. As far as being the most expensive, I don't know that that's the case. We've heard Mr. Cohen testify. I think you have to look at this over the lifetime of the project. The numbers I've seen are showing that it's less than 2 cents per kilowatt hour. My concern with wind and solar is that they're not reliable. They're not baseload sources of power. And while I've always said that I support those options, the fact of the matter is they need a backup. They need a backup.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. Representative Hilty. I'm sorry, Representative Wagenius, did you have a follow-up? Excuse me.
I just asked for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Okay, yep, we've got that. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin, members, I have had a pretty consistent position on this issue for some time now, and I have spent a lot of time paying attention to this issue, researching what has happened with the nuclear industry in this country and across the planet. What I have said consistently is that my feeling about the moratorium issue is that it's pretty much the same as one's prospect of winning the lottery, which is that the odds are about the same whether you have a ticket or not. And I think the odds of a new nuclear facility being built in Minnesota are about the same whether we have a moratorium or not. I don't really think that that's the issue. This, as has been discussed in the press and by the new majority, is only part of an energy message that's being created. We have heard that, in addition, there's going to be an effort to remove the moratorium on electric energy from new sources of coal. And also, we have heard that there's probably going to be some effort to tweak the renewable energy standard. My real concern about this issue is that we have, over the past several years now, worked very hard to develop a reputation in Minnesota as a place where renewable energy is promoted and embraced. The Department of Economic Development has expended a lot of effort, perhaps not as much as they should have, but as much as they could in the circumstances, to try to send that message and attract new businesses to the state of Minnesota. I think that the message that we're sending with this bill and the others that have been promised to follow is exactly the wrong message for immediate economic development or long-term economic development in the state, and that's really what concerns me. Currently, except for a very minuscule amount of hydropower and a growing amount of wind power, every energy dollar that we spend in Minnesota is exported. Our energy balance of trade is enormous. We have the prospect of aggressively developing energy sources that would keep our energy dollars in the state. and I really hate to see us turn our back on that.
Well, Representative Hilty, I do look forward to working with you and your expertise. We may not see exactly these issues totally the same way, but we need to work together with the administration and move this thing forward and move jobs forward. And we want to be very open. We're sometimes going to disagree on just where we're at, but I think we all want to move our state forward in a very positive way. Your former chair in the Senate is now our lieutenant governor and has a strong interest in energy, and we look forward to working with the current administration. This is not about symbolic. This is not a shot across the bow. This is trying to do what's right for Minnesota. We want to have that discussion, and we want to work with you. Representative Drazkowski renews his motion that House File 9 be moved to the Commerce Committee. The clerk will call the roll.
Chair McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Yes.
Baird?
Aye.
Dill?
Yep.
Drazkowski?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
No.
Quam?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Agenius?
No.
There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and on to Commerce Committee. Our next meeting tomorrow, on Thursday, will be a study that Representative Knuth, Chief, authored on green chemistry. We'll have a report, and then we'll also hear from some of the folks on both sides of the issue. Meeting adjourned.